What is truth? Welcome back to Thinking It Through. Today, Max Jagannathan begins the Big Word series. Max is the director of Thinking Faith, is an international speaker, and is currently undertaking a PhD in law. For the rest of this week, we will be analyzing the four big words of life. Here is the first big word, truth.
Well, hello and welcome to the first of this four-part series on the big questions. My name is Max Jagannathan. I'm from Thinking Faith, and it's a pleasure to be with you to bring you this series on four of the big questions that we are all dealing with. Whether we think about these issues or not, they are issues that are on every human heart, no matter who we are, no matter where we live, and no matter what we believe. What is truth? What is faith? What is hope? And what is love? Today we begin this short series with the question, what is truth? There's an interesting scene from an old movie where there are two thieves who have just stolen an ATM, a cash machine. They've ripped it out of the wall and they've put it in a wheelbarrow. And not being very bright, they are wheeling their ATM down a very busy street. There are shops, there are cars, there are people. And yet this ATM is covered with a sheet and they are wheeling it away to safety to see how much money they've actually managed to steal. Just as they seem free of danger, they see a police car pulling in at the top of the street, turning into the street. They don't have time to run, they can't go fast enough, so they ditch their wheelbarrow and they slowly place their ATM up against a wall outside one of the shops. Then one thief stands as if he is using the ATM, and the second thief stands just behind him as if he's waiting for it. And sure enough, when the police car drives past just a few seconds later and the officer looks across, he sees a line of five or six people waiting in line to use this ATM, this stolen ATM that isn't even plugged in. What does this tell us about the question, what is truth? The story is amusing, but it is also a little troubling because it reflects, in large part, how we are increasingly, collectively, understanding truth today. For some of us, we simply just stand in line for an ATM. We simply buy into beliefs without thinking about them. We just accept things that other people tell us because they say so, because we've never had the time to think about it. The real question is, are our ATMs plugged in? Whatever it is that we believe about the world, about ourselves, about God, about this thing called truth, have we actually checked it out? And does it actually stand up to questioning? There are a lot of ideas out there today, and so much so are these ideas debated and argued with vitriol and anger and divisiveness that many of us can be excused for even giving up on the very concept of truth. But I want to bring it back to the basic question. What is truth? Truth is something that is on every human heart. It's a yearning and a need of all people. But what is it? I want to talk about it with you today in the context of three categories of thinking. Anti-truth thinking, post-truth thinking, and then finally, true thinking. Anti-truth thinking, post-truth thinking, and then finally, true thinking. Our first category is anti-truth thinking, and it can be best summarized with the very simple assertion that truth does not exist. Now, this grows out of a strand of thinking that is probably best underpinned by a philosophical category known as postmodernism. And it came out of an idea that human conflict throughout history has been a result of people with power asserting their versions of truth for the purpose of preserving and expanding their power. And in doing so, subjugating, oppressing, and victimizing other people, in some cases, entire communities, countries, or civilizations. And so this idea of anti-truth thinking grew out of a desire to avoid these kinds of conflicts, to avoid the kinds of damage that came around where different understandings of truth find themselves in conflict. And so through thinkers and writers, great thinkers like Wittgenstein and Derrida and others, the idea came about that all truth claims are socially constructed. All truth claims are just grabs for power. The follow-through from that, which is where, in my view, anti-truth thinking went too far, is to claim that because of this, there is no such thing as truth. Truth does not exist, and it's what many of us are told today. Now, the problem with this claim is that it fails logically. It fails logically because the sentence, there is no such thing as truth, or there is no such thing as absolute truth, is an absolute truth claim in itself. And so all one has to do to prove the logical falsity of anti-truth thinking is, in responding to someone who claims that there is no such thing as truth, to simply say, was that true? That sentence that you just uttered, was that true? It's a binomial question. They have to answer either yes or no. If they answer yes, it is true, then the substance of their statement self-destructs because they are claiming that something is true, even though they're trying to deny that absolute truth exists. If they say no, it's not true, then in a similar way, the substance of their statement self-destructs because they're agreeing that it's not true. So when we look at it carefully, we see that logically, there is absolutely no way of logically claiming that absolute truth does not exist, because any attempt to deny the existence of absolute truth makes a truth claim and therefore self-destructs. It doesn't even take off. It's like an aeroplane that doesn't even take off. Absolute truth exists. The question is, how do we find it? So this idea that there is no such thing as truth is a failed idea, logically speaking, because they have to claim that it's true in order for the statement to hold. So we see that our anti-truth thinking fails philosophically. Now, that's something that has perhaps become less and less prevalent in recent years. But what has become more and more common and more powerful is the idea of post-truth thinking. So we know that anti-truth thinking fails logically. Post-truth thinking is, in many ways, far more dangerous because anti-truth thinkers claim that truth doesn't exist. And we've proven that that's not possible logically. But post-truth thinkers claim that truth doesn't matter. And that can be, as we will see in a moment, far, far more dangerous. To claim that truth does not exist fails logically. To claim that truth does not matter fails morally. Now, there are many ways of understanding this concept of post-truth thinking, but the simplest way is that it is driven by feelings. Post-truth thinking defines reality by our feelings. So truth may or may not exist to the post-truth thinker, but it doesn't really matter. What matters more are your feelings. Feelings before justice, feelings before fairness, feelings before ideals, feelings before equity, feelings before absolutely anything, including truth. Feelings are the most important thing. And so in a sense, anti-truth thinking seeded the social ground out of which post-truth thinking has grown, especially in the last 10 to 15 years. And so with postmodern thinking claiming truth does not exist, the stage was set for human ego and self-absorption and our own preferences and sense of convenience and pleasure to take hold, and post-truth thinking was on the runway. Now, anti-truth thinking, as we have seen, fails logically, but post-truth thinking fails in a much more powerful and dangerous way because it fails morally. And here is why. Post-truth thinking places each of us in the center of our moral universe. It basically says to each person, you are the moral dictator of your universe, of your reality. However you feel is what's important. That's how you determine what's right and wrong. The things that make you feel good are fine morally. The things that don't make you feel good, the people that don't make you feel good, anyone that hurts your feeling or offends you or disagrees with you or fails to affirm something that you do or want or a certain way that you live, that is wrong and that is morally bad. There's a TV show that screened on Netflix a couple of years ago called What If? And in that show, Renee Zellweger played a billionaire sociopath who was deeply manipulative, very, very powerful, but deeply, deeply immoral, self-absorbed, selfish, and driven purely by her own feelings and what she wanted. And there's a very powerful line in that show where this character, played by Renee Zellweger, says, "Do you know what I hate the most? It is the uninvited moral ideas of lesser people." And that's exactly what happens. If we buy into post-truth thinking, if it's just about our feelings, then sooner or later, other people who hurt our feelings or rub up against our feelings or disagree with something we want or say or think or feel will begin to be seen as lesser people. Post-truth thinking places each of us at a higher moral plane to other people. And in doing so, if we buy into this kind of thinking, we detract from the intrinsic dignity and value of other people. Post-truth thinking is anchored in short-sighted self-preference, in short-sighted convenience, not in higher ideals. Ideals of fairness, ideals of community, ideals of relationship, ideals of love. Indeed, ideals of truth. Whatever it might be, post-truth thinking is all about our feelings. The great writer and sociologist and Christian thinker Os Guinness wrote very insightfully that there are two types of people. People who either confirm and conform their desires to the truth, or people who try and change the truth to conform it to their desires. So we either try and seek truth and then align our lives with it, arrange our lives with it, or we don't really care what's true. We're more worried about our feelings, and we try and twist our reality and twist our world and arrange our relationships, our jobs, our lifestyle around whatever we want, regardless of the realities of what's out there. And herein lies the problem with post-truth thinking. Anti-truth thinking fails us logically. Post-truth thinking fails us morally. Now, we know from these two conclusions that absolute truth exists. It is that which corresponds to reality. Aristotle said that. Truth is that which corresponds to reality. And as much as the post-truth thinker might say it doesn't matter, it does matter. In the movie The Truman Show, Jim Carrey plays a character, Truman Burbank, who seems to be living an idyllic life in a sunny, happy city with a job, with friends. Everything seems to be easy. The problem is, of course, as we find out very early in the movie, that his whole life is a lie, and he doesn't know it. In fact, every single person in the town in which he lives is an actor or an actress. And the entirety of his life is being broadcast live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as a reality TV show around the world. And he doesn't know it. And the rest of the movie, as an audience, it doesn't matter what you believe or who you are, you spend your time cheering and hoping and yearning for Truman Burbank to break free. And that's exactly what ends up happening. He begins to see things in his life and in his town and in those around him that begin to indicate that there is something untruthful, that there are problems with the authenticity of this life that he's living, and he begins to seek for truth. Why does he respond like that? But more importantly, why do you and I respond like that when we watch the movie? Because no matter who we are or what we believe, there is a deep yearning in every human heart for truth. We don't want to live a lie. We don't want to be lied to by our friends. We don't want to be lied to by society. We don't want to be lied to by our colleagues. And we certainly don't want to be lied to by ourselves. And because of that, it is time to leave anti-truth and post-truth thinking behind and to engage in true thinking, accepting that truth is that which corresponds to reality, that it is independent of our opinion or how we feel, but that if we look to the Christian message and the person of Jesus Christ, truth is not something to be afraid of. Jesus says, "You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And then he says, as powerfully and famously as we all know, "I am the truth, the way, and the life." So for Christians and for people seeking truth, as we follow the evidence to where it leads, which is what Plato said is the way to find truth, following the evidence to where it leads will lead us to the person of Jesus Christ. Because according to the Christian message, the truth is not just a set of propositions, but it culminates in a person. Truth is a person, the person of Jesus Christ. And so knowing the truth and living the truth and living in truth becomes about much more than just believing in something. It becomes about being in an up-close and personal relationship with someone. And it's here where we see the beauty of John's use of the word logos in his gospel. Jesus is the single organizing principle, the logos, the truth, the ultimate, that defines all of reality. And so for us to tap into and live in keeping with the grain of reality in this world and in the next, we need to first come into that relationship with him. But on what basis should we do that? Why should we accept Jesus' claim that he is the truth, the way, and the life? Well, we're going to deal with that in the next episode of this series, What is Faith? And what is the basis for, specifically, the Christian faith? Thanks again for listening. God bless.
Right, well, that was Max Jagannathan sharing about the big word for today, truth. Don't miss the next big word in the big word series, which is faith, only on Good News Community Radio. You can check out the Thinking Faith website at thinkingfaith.asia. And please send us any feedback or queries you may have about the programming or the show at thinkingitthrough@gncr.org.za. Till next time.